Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharifa Belkadush, John Halef, Elizabeth Presser, and Matei Lee Burek, Jen Yutz, and Nagara Anuradha Bhagwati. Mike DeFilippo, Nick Marsilio, and Miguel Nagara are engineers. Our website is democracynow.org. Special thanks to Megan Whitney, Angela Alston, Uri Gallet, Hugh Grant, John Randolph, Peter Yoon, Jerome Bourgeois, Samantha Chambly. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
And you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, New York, where the time is just about 6 o'clock, and guess what? That means time for another action-packed edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. As we take a look at the world and the world takes a look at us, you're welcome to give us a call, as this is a semi-call-in show, meaning about half the time is spent taking phone calls. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB, taking calls pretty much on the half hour. And also reading your letters, as many letters come into us, otw@2600.com. That's 2600.com. Well, I heard the news on the way over here. This is kind of interesting, that a sentence has just been passed down in a Brooklyn court, actually a federal court in Brooklyn. Get this. This guy is accused of killing a cop, and I'm not exactly sure why this is in federal court, but it is in federal court, and he's sentenced to death. We don't have a death penalty in New York, but the feds came in and sentenced this guy to death. I mean, wow. It's like what the U.S. government does now. They go to Iraq and sentence people to death there that weren't dying before, and now they come to New York, and people who would normally just wind up in prison for the rest of their lives, they sentence to death. It just seems like a bad reputation for the feds to be getting into. It's just meeting out death left and right. I don't really know the specifics of the case. I don't really want to know the specifics of the case. Too many cases, too much depression, too many bad things going on. It just seems kind of weird, that's all I'm going to say, that we don't have the death penalty here in New York, and yet somebody was sentenced to death because a bigger authority came in and said so. Just a little weird. And, of course, we have a lot of other weird and crazy things that are going on as well, and we appreciate when people send us the crazy, weird things, because, wow, there's so many, and you could easily miss them if you're not paying attention. And that's what our show counts on, is people who don't pay attention. Because if you paid attention, you'd know all this already, and you wouldn't need me to tell you about it. For instance, today, this just came in today, the government over in England, or the United Kingdom in general, I suppose, is considering, and this really shouldn't be a surprise if you've been following this program or Off the Hook, you know that we've been talking about things like this. It just gets a little weirder every week. The government's considering installing X-ray cameras on lampposts to spot armed terrorists and other criminals. According to a leaked memo seen by newspaper The Sun, detection of weapons and explosives will become easier if the scheme drawn up by Home Office officials is adopted. However, officials acknowledged that it would be highly controversial. Why? Well, the cameras, you see, how do I say this? The cameras can see right through your clothing. Yeah. Uh-huh. The social acceptability of routine intrusive detection measures and the operational response required in the event of an alarm are likely to be limiting factors. Privacy is an issue because the machines see through clothing, according to the memo. Unbelievable. And, of course, the Home Office does not comment on leaked memos. I wonder if they comment on fabricated memos. You could just write up a memo and would they have the same no comment as the real memo? But, I mean, this is getting crazy. Well, for one thing, I guess it'll result in a lot more people volunteering to man those cameras. Which has always been a problem, getting people to sit by and see what's going on. Now everybody will be lining up to watch everyone walking down the street without any clothes on. Which I imagine would get kind of old after a while. But who knows? Here's an interesting little fact, a little tidbit here. This came from something that happened a few weeks ago. There was all sorts of fun and excitement in the streets of Athens when youths were throwing rocks and firebombs at a bank branch in a government office. they know how to riot over there, and this is what they do. Can you imagine if anybody... I'm not suggesting this, but I'm just asking you to imagine it. In New York, or Philadelphia, Los Angeles, that's not a real city, Boston, or Chicago, places like that, if they would simply throw a Molotov cocktail, firebomb, rocks, things like that, there'd be martial law declared. I mean, things like that used to happen here. I'm not saying it was a good thing when things like that happened here, but maybe, since everything else is so bad, maybe there was something that got... some steam that got released when people did things like that, because it doesn't seem like anyone's really getting badly hurt over in Greece. But anyway, here's the interesting fact about all this. They threw rocks, Molotov cocktails at bank branches and offices of the Greek's Competition Commission, damaging one room in the building before firefighters extinguished the blaze. I don't know what it is they were protesting. I don't think they're really protesting anything. They say these people were self-styled anarchists, so maybe this is just like going out for a jog or something for them. I don't know. And, of course, there are teacher strikes, student sit-ins, protest marches all throughout the country. And they're not even involved in a war. Greece is not invading other countries. Greece is not doing horrible things, like not tending to its own citizens after a natural catastrophe or covering up all kinds of government scandals. Well, maybe they're doing that. But, I mean, really, in the bigger scheme of things, Greece is kind of not the top runners of places where there should be anti-government actions of sorts. But anyway, the reason I'm bringing this up now, what happened after they did all this, they took refuge on the grounds of the Athens University of Economics near the Athens Polytechnic, which was the scene of violent clashes with riot police at a different time, a couple of days earlier. Now, this is what's interesting. Under Greek law, the police cannot enter university campuses without permission. Yeah, rioters often exploit this liberal asylum rule to avoid arrest by taking refuge within their grounds. Can you imagine if such a rule existed here? Where you could riot in East Setauket, New York, or Center Reach, or Lake Grove, and as long as you can make it over here to the State University of New York at Stony Brook and get behind our safe boundaries, they couldn't touch you. You would have safe harbor here. I mean, I'll bet the radio station would be a lot more interesting as far as programming. We have all kinds of sit-ins and takeovers and proclamations being read and a lot of listeners, a lot of people out there listening to what was going on. Wow, what a rule. This shows you how different things are. in this country. Nothing. You take refuge in a church, and I'm sure they'll knock that down to get to you. Nothing's sacred anymore. So yeah, the world is quite different, and the world's getting more and more different all the time. Not in good ways. In many instances. Get this, for instance. And this is sick. It really is sick. The city of Miami. That's our city. Unfortunately, it's our city in Florida. They're planning an official celebration at the Orange Bowl when Fidel Castro dies. Yeah, can you believe this? They're planning this. The city of Miami. How sick is that? Discussions by a committee appointed earlier this month by the city commission to plan the event have even covered issues such as a theme to be printed on T-shirts, what musicians would perform, the cost, and how long the celebration would last. It's just, words defy me. How sick can we get as a nation where this kind of thing is just accepted without the blink of an eye? I mean, you may not be a fan of Fidel Castro, but to plan out parties when somebody dies, there's just something inherently wrong with that. And Castro is certainly not anywhere near the top of the list of brutal dictators, many of whom we have supported and continue to support. When Pinochet died, there were no parties because he was one of ours. And a whole lot more people died under his rule, which was a whole lot shorter, too, than under Fidel Castro's. Not being a Castro defender or supporter here, just how about some decency? Unreal. And what's going to happen? What's going to happen when Fidel Castro finally does kick the bucket? I guess a bunch of these loonies down there in Miami will think that they can just roll merrily back in and claim their mansions on the shore and kick everyone else out, whatever it is they think they can do. All right, now this is insane. There's so many insane things this week, but I think this wins. The military calls its new weapon an active denial system, but that's an understatement. It's a ray gun that shoots a beam that makes people feel as if they were about to catch fire. And this has been all over the media over the past week as kind of like a fun story. Not like an, oh my God, what in the name of Jesus are these people doing? Where is our society going that we're creating things like this? But apart from causing that terrifying sensation, the technology is supposed to be harmless, a non-lethal way to get enemies to drop their weapons. Now, of course, here's the slant of the story. Military officials say it could save the lives of innocent civilians and service members in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. The weapon is not expected to go into production until at least 2010, but all branches of the military have expressed interest in it. Now, they had a media demonstration of this weapon last Wednesday. Airmen fired beams from a large dish antenna, mounted atop a Humvee at people pretending to be rioters and acting out other scenarios that U.S. troops might encounter in war zones. The device's two main crews located their targets through powerful lenses and fired beams from more than 500 yards away. 500 yards! Do you have any idea how big that is? Well, to give you an idea, it's 17 times the range of existing non-lethal weapons, such as rubber bullets. 17 times. Now, anyone hit by the beam immediately jumped out of its path because of the sudden blast of heat throughout the body. While the 130-degree heat was not painful, it was intense enough to make the participants think their clothes were about to ignite. This is one of the key technologies for the future, said Marine Colonel Kirk Himes, director of the, this must be a real feather in his cap, director of the non-lethal weapons program at Quantico, Virginia. Hey, let's go take a field trip to that place. Let's see the non-lethal weapons they're developing. Non-lethal weapons are important for the escalation of force, especially in the environments our forces are operating in. Stun guns are also considered non-lethal weapons. How many people have been hit by those and have died by those? This system uses electromagnetic millimeter waves, which can penetrate only 1/64th of an inch of skin, just enough to cause discomfort. By comparison, microwaves used in the common kitchen appliance penetrate several inches of flesh, if you ever should find yourself inside one of those. The millimeter waves cannot go through walls, but they can penetrate most clothing. And they refuse to comment on whether the waves can go through glass. So I guess they probably can't. I imagine a lot of people will be walking around with glass fronts from now on. The weapon could be mounted aboard ships, airplanes, and helicopters and routinely used for security or anti-terrorism operations. Okay. Now, all that said, I sense there are people out there saying, so, Emmanuel, so what? If this saves the lives of our troops, great. And you know what? I agree with that. Yeah, fine. If this is used in place of machine guns and mortars and cannons and all that kind of thing. Do they still use cannons? I don't know. If they use this instead, yeah, obviously it's better. Still kind of sick, but obviously it's better. But you know it's not going to stop there. You know these things are going to be used in our own streets. Even in this story, they talked about rioters. Well, do you think it's going to stop at foreign rioters? No. This can be used at any demonstration to keep people away. And we've seen increasing use of such methods to do this. We've seen increasing, ever since that WTO protest in Seattle, 1999, ever since then, things have been getting worse and worse as far as people being able to express themselves publicly. Everything from being arrested for using a megaphone, being arrested for congregating in groups larger than two, being arrested for no reason at all. And now, imagine this, okay? If I was in their shoes, what would I be using this kind of a weapon for? Well, I'd just have it permanently pointed down certain streets, like one of those perimeter things that you use for dogs, where they get shocked if they try to move out of your yard. Well, the same thing for human beings. How about all of Wall Street can simply have this column of fire going shooting down the street so people won't cross it? Yeah, it's not lethal. It's not really burning you, but people aren't going to, their bodies aren't going to know that, and they're not going to be able to pass. Or, how about this? Next time you need to torture somebody, you stick them in a room, you turn that thing on, you don't turn it off. You don't give them the opportunity to move out of its path. What happens to them then? Is it still non-lethal? Does it mess with their brains? And the fact that this can be aimed from, what is it, 3 football fields away? That's simply unbelievable. Imagine snipers on top of buildings just picking people off at random with heat. This is all going to happen. We're going to see these things being used a lot. That's my prediction. Of course, no one's talking about that right now. It's all the greatest thing ever because it's going to help save lives. All right. What else? All right, here's kind of a more lighter story. I think we need a lighter story after all that. This guy, you might have heard about this story. This guy escaped from prison and pretty much lived an entire country music song with everything that he did over the past few days. According to the story, it has all the makings of a country song, an escaped prisoner, his terminally ill mother, a Walmart truck, NASCAR, and a Nashville singer's tour bus. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Since Christopher Daniel Gay, 32, escaped from a prisoner transport van, probably being mocked over his name, that's reason enough for anybody to escape, he escaped from the van on Sunday, and this was, I believe, last Sunday. Was it last Sunday? Might have been. Yeah, I think it was a week ago Sunday. And eluded a 5-state manhunt by stealing a pickup truck, a big rig, and a bus that belonged to singer Christy Gale. Now, no one was reported injured. And initially, the police said his motive for fleeing was simple. I take it he was just trying to see his mom, said Michael Douglas, the police chief in Pleasant View, Tennessee, near the home where Gay's mother is dying of cancer. Now, this guy Gay has a history of theft involving trucks and other heavy equipment. He escaped during a bathroom break in Hardeeville, South Carolina. What do you want to bet they have a Hardee's in Hardeeville? As he was being taken from Texas to face felony theft charges in Alabama. The van was taking a route allowing it to pick up prisoners in other states. He then stole a pickup truck in South Carolina, made his way more than 300 miles northwest to Manchester, Tennessee, where he stole a Walmart tractor trailer filled with $300,000 worth of merchandise. Then on Tuesday, Gay got to within 50 yards of his mother's house. He could have hit her with one of those heat guns if he had one. About 25 miles northwest of Nashville, but he abandoned the Walmart truck and fled into some woods. What he done was wrong, but he knows his mama don't have long, said his mama, Anna Schull. What's weird about the story, efforts to contact Gay's family were unsuccessful. I don't understand. They just talked to his mother, yet they say efforts to contact his family were unsuccessful. Obviously not true. How much else in this story is not true? Authorities don't think he ever got to see his mother. And since then, authorities believe that he stole the bus belonging to the country singer, who is the younger sister of Loretta Lynn, known for her long hair and hits such as Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue. A man believed to be gay... Oh, you just don't write a sentence like that. A man believed to be gay arrived Thursday night at USA International Speedway, capital gay, capital G, USA International Speedway in Lakeland, Florida. What drew him to the speedway, I wonder? He told the track's manager he was there with NASCAR racer Tony Stewart and asked him for help getting a new generator for the tour bus he was driving. The SpeedFest 2007 event is being held there, but there are no plans for Stewart to appear. His story just started having a lot of inconsistencies, so we asked him for some identification, said Speedway president Bill Martino in a phone interview. The man, who Martino said was clean-cut and dressed nicely, refused and fled. Track officials, suspicious of the man's story, provided authorities with the license plate number of the tour bus. It just goes on and on from there. But, man, when people... live a life of a country song. They really take it seriously. He covered all bases here. Country singers, Walmart, tour buses, visiting mothers in hospitals, and, of course, escaping from prison. That's an important part of all that. And it just, it's got me into a, I guess, kind of a country mood.
Well, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head. That didn't hurt. And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert. Then I fumbled in my closet, through my clothes, and found my cleanest dirty shirt. Then I washed my face and combed my hair and stumble down the stairs to meet the day. I'd smoked my mind the night before with cigarettes and songs I'd been picking. But I lit my first and watched a small kid playing with a can that he was kicking. Then I walked across the street and caught the Sunday smell of someone's frying chicken. And Lord, it took me...
You know, I'm sorry. I have to apologize once again for the incredibly bad equipment here. For some reason, we can't play a CD that doesn't come through just one channel and has all kinds of spurts of sound. I don't know what's going on here. It's a good song. Check it out sometime if... you can get your own copy. All right, let's continue with... we'll have Johnny on in the background. How's that? Spent hours picking this song out, and unbelievable. Even the simplest things don't ever work. Okay. On the subject of outrage, this story got my attention. But the thing that's crazy about it is that this is something that is old. People are talking about this because it recently appeared on CNN about this kid in Georgia who was sentenced to prison for 10 years on charges of child molestation. Genelo Wilson and a group of friends had the kind of bash no parent would want their teenager to attend. Crime scene investigators combing the room in a day's in the small town of Douglasville, Georgia, found evidence of drinking, as well as condoms and wrappers littered all over. Plus, there was a video camera. And in a portion of the tape, Wilson, who was 17 years old and an honor student and star athlete, who is homecoming king, is seen having intercourse with a 17-year-old girl who was seen earlier on the bathroom floor. And during the sex act, she appears to be sleepy or intoxicated, but never asks Wilson to stop. Later on in the tape, she is seen being pulled off the bed. Other portions of the tape show a second girl who was 15 and later said she did not drink that night. She was recorded having oral sex with several boys in succession, including Wilson. And basically, because of that situation, where he was 17 and she was 15, and there is an antiquated law in Georgia which has since been changed about oral sex, he basically got a mandatory sentence of 10 years based on that. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago, until 1998, in fact, oral sex between husbands and wives in Georgia was punishable by up to 20 years in prison. That's right. Husbands and wives, 20 years in prison. Now, in Wilson's case, even though he is only 2 years older than the girl, thank you, Johnny, sorry about that, I really am, next time we'll get it right. She was 15, willing or not, she could not consent legally that night. Now, whatever their feelings about the law, jurors felt they had no choice but to find Wilson guilty of aggravated child molestation. Moments later, back in the jury room, jurors were told for the first time that the conviction came with a mandatory sentence of at least 10 years in prison. And in addition, Wilson will be forced to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life. For someone 17 having sex with a 15-year-old, 2 years difference. Unbelievable. McDade said Wilson could have had a better outcome if he had accepted the plea deal. What I believe is that Gennaro Wilson listened to people who were trying to use this case for another agenda, and he followed their advice. Before the incident, Wilson, by any measure, had beaten the odds. The son of a single mom, the high school senior, was an honor student and an all-conference football player and track star with offers to play in college. He was popular enough to be elected homecoming king at Douglas County High. I was the first ever homecoming king at my high school. He said that was a very great privilege for me. Atlanta attorney B.J. Bernstein has filed Wilson's appeal. She said prosecutors should never have brought charges and that justice should have been meted out at home. And a state legislator who helped pass the molestation law said it was never meant to police teen sex. The legislative intent was to protect women and children from sexual predators, said Representative Tyrone Brooks, a Democrat in the Georgia State Assembly. Now, today Wilson remains as steadfast as ever about not taking the deal that would have reduced his sentence by half. It's all about doing what's right, he said, and what's right is right, and what's wrong is wrong, and I'm just standing up for what I believe in. So, yeah, everyone's talking about this, but the thing is, the story I just read was dated February 7th, 2006. So the fact that people are becoming aware of this, myself included, this week, because it was on TV, well, this has been going on for quite some time. It makes you wonder, how many other cases are out there that we don't know about? Until it appears on some major network someplace, we wallow in our ignorance. We're not aware of all the nonsense that's going on out there. People who are being victimized for no reason at all. If this were to happen today, exact same scenario, exact same place, nobody would go to jail. And yet they can't take this guy out of jail because the law was changed after it was discovered to be bad because of him. Unreal. Anyway, if you want to find out more about this particular case, go to wilsonappeal.com. www.wilsonappeal.com, and hopefully this guy will face justice and be let out of prison. Already so much of his life has been ruined by this. Crazy. All right, let's take a look at one more story, then we'll take a look at some mail. You hear about this guy, the guy from Canada that the U.S. deported to Syria? Yeah, this guy was He was traveling, and we sent him over to Syria because we believed that he was a terrorist risk of some sort. chained and shackled by U.S. authorities for 11 days during interrogation and flown to Syria, where he was tortured and forced to make false confessions. Well, the Canadian government says this guy's not a terrorist. In fact, they settled for $9 million, U.S., $9 million in compensation from Canada. And yet, the U.S. government refuses to take him off the list. Here's what Canada said. On behalf, Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister, on behalf of the government of Canada, I want to extend a full apology to you and to Monia, I guess that's his wife, as well as your family, for the role played by Canadian officials in the terrible ordeal that you experienced in 2002 and 2003. I sincerely hope that these words and actions will assist you and your family in your efforts to begin a new and hopeful chapter in your lives. And they're also going to pay his estimated $1 million in legal fees. He was exonerated last September after a two-year public inquiry. It found that the Royal Canadian Mounted Police wrongly labeled Maha Arar, as an Islamic fundamentalist and passed misleading and inaccurate information to U.S. authorities, which very likely led to his arrest and deportation. Now, the U.S. government, as opposed to that nice apology from the Canadians, has repeatedly insisted it has reasons to leave the 37-year-old on its watch list. The issue has grown into an unpleasant diplomatic row between the world's largest trading partners and closest allies. And I was looking at the CNN webpage when this story came out, and it's funny how it was listed on the front page. The story, the headline was, Tortured Canadian Compensated. And they put the word tortured in quotes, as if, yeah, right, tortured. I mean, why would you put something like that in quotes? I think it's pretty indisputable he was tortured. But apparently, American media doesn't believe it, or is dubious. All right, letter time, otw@2600.com is our email address, and you're more than welcome to write to us. Let's see what we got here. I've been a listener for about a year now, and I've missed several opportunities to call in. Well, don't let that happen tonight. In just a few minutes, we'll be taking phone calls, 631-632-9872. You can be one of them. Continuing, though, the reason I don't normally call in is that the only time that I can listen to the program is the day after it is broadcast. You need to change your lifestyle so that you can be here live. Anyway, I normally listen to it on my old MP3 player as I walk off to catch the bus to class. I'd like to call in more, and maybe when my schedule permits, I will. By the way, I used to be a very strident defender of the Second Amendment right to own weapons. By listening to you, and not being spoon-fed the same old baloney from the likes of Charlton Heston, I realize that one can be intelligent, concerned with personal security, and still support limiting ownership of guns. Thank you for exposing me to this point of view. Signed, Ed. Ed, thank you very much. And yes, NRA people, we're changing people's minds here. What do you think about that? I guess that makes us dangerous. Dear Emmanuel, I was listening to the Off the Wall episode where you were talking about the tactics that the military recruiters are using to lure kids into the Army. This reminded me about the time when I was still in high school. I was with my buddy. He had made the decision to join the Air Force and was talking to the recruiter. When the recruiter tried to talk me into joining, I told him I was not interested. He then proceeded to tell me that I would never do anything other than flip burgers my whole life. I'd flip one into his face for that, but never mind. Needless to say, this convinced me all the more not to join, and I promptly told him, up yours. A few years went by, I graduated and became a software engineer. I decided this recruiter deserved an update on my career in burger flipping, so I sent him an update letter with my business card. Thought I would share this story with you. Keep up the good work on both shows. Signed, Dean. Thank you, Dean, for that uplifting story, and for your uplifting slogan here, which appears after your name. Keep hope alive, save Hotel Penn. Oh, yes. We are making lots of progress. We should have a website up and running in the next couple of days. If you go to talk.hope.net, you'll see our online forum. But we're talking about the Hope Conferences and plans to save the historic Hotel Pennsylvania in New York City, which is slated for demolition. It's also the home of our Hope Conferences. So obviously, we would like it to stay, and we'd like some history to be preserved. And if you want to help us with that, go to talk.hope.net and learn what's going on. Let's see what else. I want to stick with the subject of military recruiting for just a moment more. Fortunately, it's all out of order. Ah, yes. I've heard a lot of talk of recruiters for the military and maybe a hint towards brainwashing on the show lately. Well, to brainwash a person, one must first break what the person has already learned. Perhaps this is why public schools are in such bad shape. If the government wanted to brainwash our children, they just have to take control over education. Then they can teach only enough for the students to barely get by and send in the recruiters when it looks like the child won't be going to college. That's how Hitler did it with his Hitler Youth Program. Something to ponder on, signed Uriah C. It is something to ponder on. Dear Off the Wall, I agree with you that if schools allow the military to come in and recruit people, then they should allow other places like major corporations or cults or whatnot to do the same thing. Yeah, Scientology. Let's let them in. How do you think parents would react if Scientology came in and set up a little table in the cafeteria and told students, you know, you're going to be flipping burgers all your life if you don't sign up and become a Scientologist? What's the difference? Well, being a Scientologist, you'll probably stay alive. But at what cost? Oh, yeah, more letters coming. I think the government does its fair share of brainwashing in schools as it is. They force you to say the Pledge of Allegiance and National Anthem. Well, technically, they don't force you to. You don't have to. Of course, you'll be chastised if you don't. That's how it was for me in grade school, K through 5. And this is done to make you love your country. Granted, it's good to like one's country, but I don't think you should be forced to do it. Back to the military. What they don't tell you when they are informing you of all the cool things you can do is, most of the cool high-tech stuff you can do, you have to score real high on something known as ASVAB, A-S-V-A-B. I guess it's some kind of test or something. If you score low, you're just going to be cannon fodder. Signed, Ling K. And here's something else. My comment is not exactly about recruiting in schools, but through the schools. When I was a senior in high school, class of 98, I took the general ACT exam instead of SAT. One of the options with this test is that you can allow interested schools to contact you. Generally, a school would say, give us a list of all students with a score over X in order to send info about their school. Besides just schools, the various Armed Forces RLTC programs are allowed access. Yeah, there is no way to say only schools, no military. When called, I specifically asked them not to call again. And after the third call from the same branch of the Air Force, I asked them why they keep calling me when I've asked them not to. Their response, each recruitment location counts as a different organization, so those other calls must have been from other recruitment locations. This blew my mind. I can see them claiming each branch of the military is separate, but each physical office counting as a separate entity? Anyway, I just thought I would send in my experience with military recruiters. And after a few more calls, I started playing along with them, wasting as much of their time as I could, making them think I was interested, but had so many questions. It was kind of fun for a while. Signed, Scott from Michigan. And yeah, play with these guys. Waste their time. Do whatever you have to do. Here's another letter. I grew up in a suburb of Boston. When I was in sixth grade, there was a bully who was making my life miserable. I didn't even want to go to school. I used to throw up in the morning with a nervous stomach. I hated going to school. No matter how many times I reported the incidents, nothing was ever done. Finally, one day I was sitting on the steps of my school talking about some homework assignment with a kid in my class, and this bully guy came up behind me and shoved me, knocking me over, making me drop the textbook that was on my lap. I picked up the textbook and blindly swung it at him, trying to get him to go away, and I hit him, giving him a bloody nose. The school principal knew that the bully had been giving me problems in the past and didn't even punish me forcing me to apologize to the kid. This bully's mother, though, made a big deal about it and actually had charges filed against me. I was charged with assault and battery with a dangerous weapon. Yes, a book is a dangerous weapon, especially these days. My lawyer was able to have the dangerous weapon charge dropped because it was a school-issued textbook, and I was given the opportunity to plead to a continuation without a finding, which meant if I agreed to a year of probation and successfully completed the terms of probation, the DA would drop the charges. My lawyer recommended that I agree to that, and so did my parents. And I was 12 years old. 12 years old! So I did what my parents told me to do. I didn't know any better. Now, I figure that a continuation without a finding is a scam. It's just a trick DAs use to get a victory in a case they know they can't win if it went to trial. I was put on probation for a year with two conditions. I had to stay out of trouble in school, and I had to see a psychologist for at least three visits, and more if the psychologist recommended it. I saw the psychologist. I told him the story. He knew that I wasn't a troubled kid, and I don't have any anger problems or anything like that, so that went fine. The entire year I was in school, this kid's friends used to try to pick fights with me, got me in trouble, or try to get me in trouble, shove me around, make false claims against me. But even the probation officer I had to meet with knew I was a good kid and said, you shouldn't even be here. I still have scars from times that bully has shoved me down and hit me. Well, here's part two of the story. My record was supposedly clean. I was talking to a recruiter about joining the Air Force. Yes, the same Air Force that was prank calling that other guy. I needed money for college. I figured if I joined the Air Force, I could get job training, job experience, and money for college. The military viewed continuation without finding as guilty, and also saw the dangerous weapon charge that had been dismissed. I could still join the military if I got some waiver that would have involved me going to court and putting me through a big hassle, and then I would not be eligible for a rank promotion beyond a certain point, and that I'd be limited to certain duties, etc., etc. That incident was the only thing I have ever done in my life, and you can certainly argue that the brat deserved it. I had a job in high school that involved handling sometimes $3,000 a day in cash, with no reliable paper trail to determine if I was stealing. I never stole a penny. I'm actually an Eagle Scout, and I never have gotten as much as a speeding ticket since then, or before then. Not only has this stupid sixth grade incident prevented me from joining the military, but when I turned 18... I volunteered to be an adult leader in my troop because a lot of my friends were still in it. The background check involved with becoming a Boy Scout volunteer uncovered this stupid sixth grade incident, including the dismissed charge. Luckily, everybody reviewing my application knew me well enough to just ignore the situation. I'm trying to get both state and national representatives and other members of government to allow complete expungement of juvenile records with a judge's approval, because currently, even if the state allows expungement of records, if they join the military, they must still disclose the record, even if the record is sealed or expunged, even if the case was found not guilty. So much for innocent until proven guilty. My hope is that if the national government allows complete expungement of juvenile records, that kids who make one dumb mistake could join the military and not have to answer about juvenile offenses and worry about being disqualified for any position in the military. I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this. If it wasn't for that stupid incident, you'd be in the military now. I don't know. Kids usually don't commit crimes with malicious intent. They usually end up getting into a fight or pulling some stupid prank, joyriding in a stolen car, or stupid things like underage drinking. I'm sure I'm not the only person who has been prevented from joining the military, and I'm sure my case of a fight with a bully is not unique either. But it is helpful information for all those people out there who want to stop getting hassled by the military. Go hit a bully with a textbook. Get charges filed against you, and you're free and clear. Continuing here, the problem in this country is that stupid pranks and fights that kids pulled many years ago, people would just say, boys will be boys, and kids never change, but now they end up in court. Whatever happened to judges who told people, join the army or go to jail? And juvenile cases from 30 years ago are probably not even on record anymore because of the lack of computers back then. Bottom line is, my charges were supposed to be dismissed. I don't think that anyone should have to answer that they were charged with an offense that was dismissed. You are innocent until proven guilty, not the other way around. Kids do dumb things. I was only 12. I still got phone calls from recruiters long after I tried to join the military, and they knew I was disqualified. I would have thought they would have taken me off their list already. And by the way, this is the icing on the cake here. The bully is now a cop. That's justice for you. Okay, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. I see zero phone calls on the line, so I'm going to read another letter And hopefully some phone calls will come in. I'll check after this letter. Otherwise, we have many letters. We can go on for hours. Dear Emmanuel, during a recent edition of Off the Wall, January 3rd, actually, you had a caller mention Nazis, to which you replied that there really weren't any anymore. This is not true. I currently live in northwestern Germany, and the National Socialist Party is very much active. There have been reports of several thousand demonstrating in the area. Just wanted to clarify, signed Emily. Well, Emily, what I meant was the Nazis are not in the same position they were in back in their heyday. Yeah, there's always going to be lunatics out there that believe anything. And sure, Nazis are no exception, neo-Nazis, what have you, whatever you want to call them. There's all those kind of people. That's not the same as it was back then. And I doubt it will ever be quite like that. Certainly not with that cast and characters. A different cast and characters, entirely possible. Okay. Let's take this phone call, and then we'll read some more letters. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey, Emmanuel. How are you this
Good.
Evening?
How are you doing? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's not bad. Weather's a little bit to be desired of, but other than that, can't
Got the
complain.
Rock and Roll Museum there.
Yeah, it's all right. I've never been, but...
I'm trying to think of more things here. I'm trying to...
Center, let me tell you that.
Yeah.
That's kind of my forte.
I like Ohio because it's like one of those states where you can have a sad country song through both channels that tells a sad story.
Quite certainly.
What's on your mind?
Well, let me tell you. Recently, I was sent an email. I attend ITT Tech. Don't know if you've heard of them, but, you know, it's that... technical school that seems to be littered all over the country. They
uh-huh.
have sappy commercials, you know. I you know, thought I'd be flipping burgers for the rest of my life. And then I went to ITT, and now I'm, you know, directing, you know, comlink setups for locomotives and some fantastic job, you know.
And you didn't have to get sent overseas to do it.
That's correct.
To fight an unpopular war.
Well, the point is this. They have a... career placement program, and they anything that they try to get you hooked up with, all the companies that are on the panel and all the discussion boards and things like that, they're all requiring experience. Well, I just checked my email today, and I got an email from a recruiter saying that I seem to have matched the United States Army's credentials for some position, which they didn't mention which position I matched.
Uh-huh.
It's, you know, forced. But it's just funny how you were just talking about it a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, well, that's silly. You know, I haven't had recruiters, you know, on my tail since high school. And, you know, I'm 25 now, and, geez, they're still knocking at the door.
Well, I suspect they're going to be knocking at a whole lot more doors, too, because they're going to be needing so many more people. This whole Iraq adventure just keeps getting worse. And now, I don't know if you saw the news over the last week, but basically Bush said, you know, it's okay to kill Iranians if we find them in Iraq and they're interfering, you know. And I understand sort of the thinking behind that. Yeah, they're fighting against us. But, you know, they are right next door, and we did start interfering a whole lot longer than they did. It's understandable that they would take an interest in the affairs of a country right next door. I'm not trying to justify it or anything like that, but this opens up the door to a whole big prolonged conflict with Iran now. And Iran is now allied with Venezuela, and North Korea is getting, you know, angry again about something. This could get much, much bigger, and a whole lot more people are going to be needed, and I think the draft is, around the corner.
Well, certainly, certainly, absolutely. And, I mean, what better place to find your fodder or whatever you may call it, your front line is standing, you know, sitting in classrooms all over the countryside right now.
Right. And the thing is, who's going to tell them any different than what they're being told by these people who really know how to speak to kids, who really know how to impress kids? And kids are impressed by fast cars and yes, firearms too, and all sorts of high tech gizmos. And that's what they use to wow them and make them believe that's what they're going to be doing.
Do we have to have that? Do we have to play on that appeal? I mean, I think there's other ways. There seems to be plenty of people out there that are willing to fight for our country. And, albeit I'm not in the military and have no aspirations of joining the military, but if worse came to worst, I would pick up a rifle and fight, you know. But we're not in those times anymore. And the silliness, I've never seen a war get this out of hand, or quote-unquote war. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I'm at a loss for words. But I do remember you mentioning last week, I think you were talking about possibly setting up some program or something should be in place to persuade, these young, I like to call them victims of the military, otherwise, or at least an enlightenment program that explains both sides of the story.
Uh-huh.
Have you come across anything, anyone that's interested in doing something like that? I mean, I'd definitely be interested in, you know, working with people, I don't know. What would be the first steps, maybe?
I think
more so my question.
I think the first step is to get access the same way that the military has access now. If they're allowed to set up a table in a high school cafeteria, someone from another organization should be allowed to set up a table in that same location that counters the points that the military is making. Of course, getting that to actually happen is going to be like pulling teeth, but that's really the only way you're going to reach people and make them think of an alternative to what they're being told.
Right, right. I agree. So we need to get in there and set up some sort of an information booth that, whereas the military may be fantastic in all these other areas, we have alternate options available to us.
Yeah, and it has to come from within. The kids in the schools have to be interested in doing this, and they can either run it themselves or they can invite some outside group to come in, like the War Resisters League or even the ACLU, or who knows, anybody who can actually just put forth a different perspective so people will have something to compare it to. But it's got to happen. If you just sit back and think someone else is going to do it, it doesn't work that way.
Certainly. One last thing, though. You had mentioned a few shows ago about back in the day, there used to be a lot of war songs, and now we don't hear that so much anymore. It's actually more so like you'd be protesting the war, and now you're exiled because you shouldn't protest the war. My goodness,
right.
What are you, anti-Semitic, or something like that, or you're anti-American and all this and that. I'm working with a few people on putting together a project where I would like to archive songs not only from previous wars and previous times of war,
mm-hmm.
but also I'm sure there are many artists out there right now that have, for example, Wyclef Jean. I know he did I'm not sure if you mentioned it or not, but he did a song that, I guess, something about if I were president, and now it's being, it's not on any outlet, no radio will pick it up, MTV said no, this and that, and he's being looked at as sort of like an anti-war guy.
Well, send us the info and we'll play it for sure. I'm sure we're already playing it.
Yeah, okay. Well, I would definitely be interested, I'm working on this project to try to archive anything and everything I can find that is musical, that supports or is against the war. And I'm going to make that public to everyone that, you can simply log on,
uh-huh.
get your basic interests satisfied whichever way you decide, whether you are for or against the war. But, I mean, that's still, everyone deserves that voice.
Right. Now, and when you think back to the way things were during Vietnam, there were so many songs on the radio that encouraged people to question, think differently, turn on to all sorts of alternative things, very blatantly anti-war. And you don't see that today because of the media conglomeration. Everything is run by the same people who have a vested interest in keeping it all going.
Certainly. So, I don't see why it's such a problem to be outspoken and have an opinion these days. But
that's because people who do that change the world, and there's no better proof than that, the fact that they're so afraid of it. By the way, let me ask you, do you know anybody who went to the demonstration on Saturday?
What demonstration?
You see, now that's exactly the same thing that I said. There's an anti-war demonstration in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. According to varying reports, and I don't know why they have to vary so much, either tens of thousands of people or 500,000 people showed up to this thing. And I know a lot of people, all my friends, everybody I know, either nobody was going or they didn't know about it, or they kept it to themselves if they did. And I have to wonder.
The people that were anticipated upon showing up were actually there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean,
I understand completely. So just another example of how what's the expression? I suppose the curtain is pulled over our eyes, so to speak.
Well, my point is that I don't think just having a demonstration that even if that many people showed up, that's great. But it's certainly not enough, because what happens and what's happened in the past is people go to these things and they expend their energy and they come home thinking that they've accomplished something when absolutely nothing is going to change. I think the only way that we're ever going to see any kind of a change, or at least more people taking notice and possibly having this thing build, is if there's a permanent presence of sorts, an occupation. For instance, surrounding the Pentagon, this is something I've come up with years ago, where 10,000 people, or how about this? How about we just get a single line of people with anti-war shirts or whatever, signs, whatever is permitted now, just to walk in front of the White House, and I guess you're not allowed to stand in front of the White House, God knows what you'd be up to, but walk around the thing in a circle with an anti-war shirt. They can't stop that, at least not yet. If you get a few thousand people to do that, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that is as good as shutting down a city, because you're always there. And it's going to take time. It's going to take effort. It's going to take a lot of sacrifice. But that's how you get the attention of people. That's how you inspire more people to get involved and not to forget about it the Sunday after the demonstration, which I fear has happened here.
I agree. A constant presence. Someone constantly breathing down your neck, of course, more action, I think, will then, be taken if we keep that constant pressure.
Mm-hmm. I will do the first 24 hours. If this starts up and we get enough people to surround the White House, I'll be down there for as long as it takes until I fall down from lack of sleep. I'll take the first shift. And I think other people will come in. And
I agree. I mean, 100%. The problem, though, is I think whereas maybe individuals such as yourself and I and many other people who are most – I'm going to guarantee most listeners of this program and, tomorrow's program as well. These people who have been doing this for so long, we just find it so difficult, I guess, to find others to join us. Whereas, people may be, hoorah for the particular plan at hand.
Well, people don't want to join because they don't see it moving forward. They just see the same old faces saying the same old rhetoric. And, you need progressive actions. You need something to actually feel like you're going someplace and changing the world. And, until that happens, I don't think you're going to get new people. Anyway, sir, I want to thank you for calling. We're out of time.
Oh, I appreciate it. So, thanks so much, Manuel.
All right. And thanks everybody else who called and didn't get on. Sorry about that. We're not going to be on next week because of the reggae-thon. That's where we play reggae music all the time. And I encourage you to listen to that. I know I will be. Tomorrow night, Off the Hook, we have a special fundraiser. In fact, those of you who want the full set of the Hope DVDs, you might not want to miss this because we have a really special, crazy deal that undercuts even us. In fact, some of us are rather upset by that. But during the hour tomorrow night, 7 to 8 on WBAI, we'll be doing a fundraiser, and that will be a very special premium for everybody. Okay, Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Until then, stay alert. Email us, otw@2600.com. Visit the Hope forums, talk.hope.net, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Good night.
Easy listening. I'm in that easy listening mode. Easy listening. Why don't we do it in the middle of the road? Kick off your shoes, sit back, relax, say boo. Tell me what more can an old rocker do? Easy listening, easy listening. Thank you.
say,
kick off your shoes, sit back, relax-a-boo,
relax-a-boo,
relax-a-boo, relax-a-boo. Tell me what more can an old rock-a-doo,
rock-a-doo, rock-a-doo.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.